I'm Eric Thiel. We've got another live session for you today. Joining me in a very cramped JPR studios is the entirety of Truth and Salvage Company. Welcome, you guys.
Hey!
I don't think that we've ever had six people in here plus me, so you guys are setting a record.
Nice. First time for everything, Eric.
Thankfully, you're all willing to stand, because that's about all the room we've got. The new album is called Pick Me Up. I want to talk about it. I want to talk about how you guys got started, how you guys all met one another. But let me start by talking about when Chris Robinson from Black Crowes found you, talked to you, discovered you, and said, hey, I think I can help you guys maybe do a little bit more than what you were doing. How did that all come about? How did you guys meet Chris Robinson from Black Crowes?
Our manager, Pete Angelus, introduced us to him, and he saw us play a show and was just starting Silver Era Records with his brother, Rich, and with Pete, and we're looking for artists, and we happened to be there, I guess, right at the right time, and Chris was invited us to his house, and we did pre-production for a couple weeks, and then spent a month tracking the record in and around Los Angeles and in the valley and the hills, and had a great time with him, and spent about 3 months together, and then ended up going on tour with him for 4 months, and then put out the record in May of 2010.
And the guy you just heard talking is Tim?
That's
Tim
Jones. This is Tim Jones.
And who else is here in the studio?
This is Smitty.
Hello.
Hello, Walker.
Dean Moore Bass.
I'm Adam Grace.
Scott Kinnebrew. Scott Kinnebrew.
Tell me a little bit about the band name. Where did that come from?
Well, we were... this is Scotty here. And we were a really loose assortment of musical friends. And we call ourselves a Denim Family Band. And it consisted of us really getting together on Wednesday nights at this place called Crane's and having a few too many and singing songs that we didn't really know with friends that were really growing closer by the beer. And, you know, it started being a lot of fun. So it was like this loose, I'm getting to the point of the name, but we were this loose assortment or arrangement of friends that were playing music together and called ourselves Denim Family Band because we sang songs about blue jeans, and we had a friend named Lissy. She was the Denim Queen or the Blue Jean Queen, and we had a Denim Man, stuff like that. So when it came down to it, Chris Robinson, everybody was like, yes, this is, y'all are awesome. There's so many points. Great, great, great. This is one thing we need to talk about. It's the name of your band.
Nobody's going to take you seriously with a name like Denim Family Band.
And so, you know, we liked it, but we realized that Prince already had copyright trademarks on Family Band, and we decided we didn't want to step on Prince's toes. We started the long process of trying to find names and open up the Webster Dictionary. This is turning really long. Sounding Arrows is one. The Bonfires, the Lonely Hearts, but the Loyal Hearts, but it was too close to the Lonely Hearts.
Never Birds
from Peter Pan.
Rabbit Foot.
Rabbit Foot. I never was a fan. Chicken Fingers.
No good. So did you guys end up doing like rock, paper, scissors to weed them down or what?
Well, so then...
Moral of the story is...
The moral... the friend, you know, honestly, we did not come up with it. Our friend Bon Harris, who has this industrial rock band called Knights of Reb back from the early 90s and late 80s, he was like, hey, man, I got this name. I hear you're looking for a name for your band, chap. He's English. And he's like, I got it. It's Truth and Salvage Company, mate. And
it's Australian, bro.
I'm sorry. They said, I like it a lot. And it was like Truth and Salvage Company. It stuck. It took us a while. We had a bunch of different panels of people deciding what should be the name. And Truth and Salvage Company was one that it stuck with everybody. And as I read in an article, it seems like a name we really have grown into. So.
And the Rolling Stones was already taken, apparently.
Right. So you had to move on to Plan B. Truth and Salvage Company, my guest, live in the JPR studios. Their new album is called Pick Me Up. I can already tell that you guys have a tendency to finish each other's sentences. We'll talk a little bit about that background and how you guys got to know one another. But let's hear some music first. What are you going to play?
Hail Hail.
It's Hail Hail, the opening track from our debut record that you just spoke of.
Whoa.
Thank you.
is all here with their heads full of reefer and their bellies full of beer. 16 years of living the dream with a bite of all our family. Hail, hail, the gang's all here with their eyes wide open and our minds super clear. Ready seems to see what it means to be the rulers of our destiny. Alright. Friend Smitty's got some questions.
Smitty's got some questions
about the planets out in space.
Ooh.
How we got here in the first place.
We got so many questions.
And what's to come after?
Hail, hail, the gang's all here with their heads full of reefer and their bellies full of beer. 16 years of living the dream with the pride of all our family. Hail, hail, the gang's all here with their eyes wide open and their minds super clear. Pretty it seems to see what it means to be the rulers of. Laura!
That is Truth and Salvage Company live in the JPR studios. Hail, hail, going back to their album also called Truth and Salvage Company from 2010. Smitty, Walker, Dean, Adam, Scotty, and Tim all standing in like a half circle here in the JPR studios.
Yep.
You guys have so many vocalists. How do you go about choosing who takes lead on a given song and how those songs come together?
We have a sing-off.
Rochambeau.
In the mornings. Like that show, The Singing Bee. Usually there's a person who brings a song to the group who will say, here's a song that I like and singing it. And then usually that person is singing the lead on it. And then we kind of all jump in. I've been accused of harmony stealing at times when I'll often grab the first harmony part because I don't know, I hear weird things. So
do each one of you have a slightly different quality to your individual voices that lends itself to a specific kind of song or a specific vocal range? Or is it just all gang vocals all the time?
We usually if I bring a song to the table, I'll sing the song with Timmy or Scotty. So, and I think, you know, we find out who does, you know, falsetto's better, head voice is better, low's better, you know, medium range is better, and we've figured that out. You know,
I can't sing vibrato at all. I mean, if I'll try like, oh, no, I really can't. I've tried to sit around in the car and like get that nice like rich. I'll just like flat pan it, but I can go,
and that's about it.
That's about it.
Well, to get vibrato for Scotty, we'll put a microphone in a van and go over a bumpy road and just have him hit this note.
That's how we get it sounding.
That's how we get him to do his vibrato.
All right, so I'm not sure that there is a particularly short answer to this question, but it kind of started back east, the band, and then came together completely in Los Angeles, and now you guys are all back in the Nashville area. Is that the chronology of it?
Yeah, well, Scrappy Hamilton was a band from Asheville, North Carolina, that built quite a great following, and then when they all moved to Los Angeles, they hooked up with Timmy and I, and we became the Denim Family Band, and then we lived there for years and years, and then the move to Nashville was really just about getting closer to our fans. You know, we realized that we had really built up a huge following on the West Coast. And as far as the rest of the country, you know, there's a lot of land between that and the rest of the country.
Yeah.
So we were like, let's move to Nashville. Let's give it a shot. And let's give it a year to really build up our crowd down there like we have on the West Coast. So that was really the goal.
So how does that work? Six different guys all packing up and moving 3,000 miles across the country. Do you just buy one big farmhouse and everybody takes a room, or is it... Are you looking for six different places to live? How did that work?
We found a big house outside of Nashville in a town called Hendersonville, North Carolina. It's right Hendersonville, Tennessee. Hendersonville, Tennessee. And it's about 15 miles outside of downtown Nashville, and we all just plopped.
Did you have families and stuff to move as well? Or
We've moved our significant others, but there's no children in the band as of yet. A few of us moved our wives and girlfriends out, and and we're still kind of working into the transition, trying to figure out where we're going to be this next year.
It took a lot of planning, and for anybody that was paying attention, you know, it was definitely one of the reasons why this record took 2+ years to get done, because we had actually recorded it right before we made the move, and we kind of just weren't really in the right headspace when we had recorded it the first time. Yeah, that was my segue.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that. I was reading that you guys recorded this album 3 times.
This is true.
Yeah.
What did the first version sound like compared to what
trippy,
we know now?
Trippy, really, really trippy.
We recorded the first version through an old boot because we were trying to get experimental into a 4-track. It didn't sound very good. It
sounded like a Sebado record.
Yeah. All the drum parts were on old oil drums.
the first version we recorded with an awesome, great producer, Rob Schnapp. But like I said, we weren't really in the right headspace to make the record at the time. And I think whereas you hear the jubilance and the excitement and the fun in this record, that it was kind of the antithesis to that. It was kind of a lot of foreboding and more hesitation and you know, a different set of songs. Some of the songs are similar and there's great recordings of those, and it was, you know, it was definitely no fault of Rob's at all. It was really just we didn't end up coming up with our best work.
So there's Asheville, there's Nashville, there's Los Angeles, there's some Midwest stuff going on. Is this just melting pot American music, or is there anything that you guys feel influences your sound more than other things?
Psychedelic melting pot American music.
Nice. We should stamp that right on the bottom of the CD, right? Well, you know, what I find interesting, though, listening to the songs on your two albums is that rather than each song going down a different avenue that highlights some of your individual musical influences and backgrounds, it's almost like you've brought all of those things into the center, and all of the songs you're creating have shades of all of those things in them.
That's what we hope.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we hope happens.
Yeah, we are intentionally a band, and we are intentionally together and making music together, but there's definitely never been any intentional thing of like, oh, we can't do this song because it doesn't sound like Truth and Salvage, or this, like, what is our intention? Whereas I think probably other groups do that, and maybe it works for them, but we don't have a lot of like intentional efforts to try and force any particular sound.
Truth and Salvage Company are my guests live in the JPR studios out in support of their new album. It's called Pick Me Up. Can we hear another tune? What are you going to play next?
This is a song from a record called Island.
It's Truth and Salvage Company live on open air here on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio. Online streaming at www.ijpr.org. Their new album is called Pick Me Up. You guys were out on tour recently with the Avett Brothers, and that must have been kind of an unusual experience to watch a band that is riding a really tremendous wave of popular support. Just seeing how that size of a production comes off, I'm sure that there were many things to glean from that.
Yes, indeed. So always so good to watch the Avett Brothers play. We met Avett Brothers back in, say, 2001, up in Brevard, North Carolina for a festival. Scrappy Hamilton was hired to play, and the Ava Brothers were hired to play. And there was nobody there except for Scrappy Hamilton and the Ava Brothers.
Really?
Pretty much, no. Wow. And then we were living in Asheville at the time, and Ava Brothers, we watched Ava Brothers, and we clapped. And then they watched Scrappy Hamilton, and they clapped. And it was the first time brotherhood was really made that day. Wow. We got them to come open up for us in Asheville, North Carolina. And it was the first time they played there. I mean, like, it was the first time they ever played. They opened up for us. The next time they came, they filled this place. They opened up for us. I mean, like incrementally, exponentially, their crowd has literally flip-flopped on itself, enveloped to where it's now like 10,000. But it's never stopped.
Are you guys able to point to anything specific that leads you to believe, this is what you do in order to catch that right wave? Because you guys probably see all kinds of great bands, and you know all kinds of great bands, and you yourselves are great musicians. So have you found anything that gives you insight as to what is that key to ride that one big wave?
Pure love. I mean, when you see those guys, they play with more energy and more passion and pure love that comes across. I mean, it doesn't even matter how well they play their instruments. It just comes across. It washes over the audience, no matter if it's 10 people or 10,000. And that's how you do it. You just got to love what you do every second you're on stage, every second you're in a radio station, it's just they love it, and you can tell.
Yeah. And they're kind of the godfathers of that, style. They were doing that before the Mumfords, before the Lumineers. All these bands have been listening to the Ava Brothers for 10 years.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of people realize that. You know, they didn't really, they're just some kids out of Concord, North Carolina, that grew up listening to country music and decided to put a bass drum on the front of the stage. And I'm sure they saw somebody else do it, but they brought that to the forefront.
It's almost like an old vaudeville thing,
right?
To have that kick drum.
Yeah, they're definitely the godfather.
All right, so you guys are spending time in a big farmhouse in Tennessee. You spend hours and hours and hours in a van together, driving the highways and byways. And you finish each other's sentences to a large degree. Do you guys really all get along as well as it seems you all get along?
I mean, for the most part, we played in Bellingham, Washington the other night, and there was like 10 people there. Wasn't
10,000 people there? What are you talking about?
Wasn't our biggest crowd ever? And we all went back to the hotel parking lot and played songs to each other till like 4 in the morning.
Really?
Yeah, so like we're and that's a fun thing that we've been getting into doing again that we did when we first started out.
Scotty, what was the thing you said earlier? You guys become better friends with each beer.
Oh yeah, I was talking about the other people, these guys. No, this is totally different.
That was back in the old days.
Well, Tim definitely becomes better looking with each beer. And when you got to share a bedroom with somebody, then hey, that's not such a bad thing.
Oh.
Hey.
Tim, I read something interesting about your background in that you somehow managed to figure out a way of studying rock and roll in college.
I did. There was Glenn Gass, who was a music/history professor at Indiana University, was the first person to start a history of rock and roll class in a big state school. And he wrote a textbook on it. And so because of him, all these other classes and other students. So there was a semester in the Motown, there was a semester in the Beatles, a semester on Frank Zappa, a semester in the 70s, a semester in the 80s, a semester just on the 50s, a semester just on the 60s.
Wow.
Hmm. All music.
What were you going to do with that?
What's that?
What were you going to do with that?
Well, I definitely always had sights on playing music. I started playing in bars when I was 16 years old and always made more money at playing music than I made in my summer jobs or, at Pizza Hut.
Hey, Timmy, is it true that half of every popular song ever written?
I know. Yes, just the good half of every popular song.
The ones that they run through on those Time Life commercials on TV, like the best hits ever, and you get 8 seconds of each song.
Well, you should try to stump them right now, Eric.
But there, well, we can do that. But my only other goal aside from playing music was to teach history. So I ended up with a history degree.
Nice.
I don't know where it is. I've never seen it, but apparently I got it.
I read online that Walker tends to write about trains and traveling. Scotty writes about time travel and boats. Is that true? Smitty writes about home and family. And you write about girls? Is that still true?
girls, women love forlorn, lost love.
Is that
yearning.
Morphed at all, or is that still how you separate?
It's kind of accurate. That's pretty accurate. Where did you get that from?
Just deep research.
Deep cut.
Right. My study of the history of rock and roll includes studying you guys.
That's awesome. Right. That makes us feel good, Aaron.
Cool. Truth and Salvage Company are my guests live in the JPR studios. Their new album is called Pick Me Up. Can we hear one more tune?
Yeah.
What are you going to play for us?
This is called Appalachian Hilltop, and this song was written in Southern Ohio and reminds me a lot of Southern Oregon, actually.
Hilltop rolling, gather your seats to be sown. Appalachian hilltop, welcome me home. These old patchwork hilltops reminding me of what I am and what I'm not. And the coal mines that started closing 20 years ago. Well, the people started moving out. Sick and tired of living from hand to mouth, but praying the diamonds come from coal. Appalachian hilltop rolling, gather your seeds to be sown. Appalachian hilltop, welcome me home. Oh, been talking to a wise man, walking through the fields of my father's land. Don't judge, son, give it a stone to grow. And say goodbye to the mom and pop, living in the age of the one-stop shop. But pray now, the diamonds come from coal. Appalachian hilltop rolling, gather your seeds to be sown. Appalachian hilltop, welcome me home. This mighty river is flowing, the spirit that will never go old. Appalachian hilltop, welcome me home.
Oh, we worship on Sunday. Try to raise our heels up the driveway. We're up at dawn.
That is Truth and Salvage Company live on Jefferson Public Radio. Their new album is called Pick Me Up. Smitty, Walker, Dean, Adam, Scotty, Tim.
Yeah.
This has been a lot of fun. Thanks for stopping and visiting with us.
Thank you, Eric.
So cool.